We have six bills, and we wanted to let you know that in talking with the staff people, it's anticipated that we will fulfill all of the obligations on our little docket sheet or our calendars every morning when we have a hearing. So we anticipate we can get through in 2 hours. Some of the bills don't seem like they're too controversial, but in any event, I don't want to have to impose timelines. I just want you to keep the time in mind as we proceed through the morning. We have two people to speak on House Bill 2286, so I'll open the public hearing on that House bill and ask Mr. Wade and Mr. Powell to come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Patrick Wade. I'm here today as a representative of the Oregon State Bar from the debtor-creditor section of the bar. The bill today, 2286, is a bill designed to ease the process of conducting judicial sales, including judicial foreclosure sales. Basically, the bill is designed to allow county sheriffs to accept cashier's checks or teller's checks instead of being limited to accepting only cash or currency at execution sales. The purpose of the bill is to promote competitive bidding at sales to reduce the risks involved to parties participating in sales having to acquire large sums of cash and appear in public places with cash, and to be able to bid on the property that's being sold. As I mentioned in my prepared remarks, in our office alone this past year, we've had situations where we've had excess proceeds at foreclosure sales conducted under the non-judicial trustees sale process under trustees, with excess proceeds as much as $30,000 going back to the property owner after the sale. At the same time, I've been involved in several sales conducted judicially where the county sheriff conducts the sale, where the sheriff has required cash on the barrelhead, and people have shown up at the sales with cashier's checks expecting to be able to participate in the sale. And the consequence of this is that the usual event is that the judgment creditor enters a credit bid for some portion or all of the amount of the judgment, and is the successful bidder at the sale, and the property goes to the judgment creditor for often a fraction of its true value. The bill also is designed to accommodate concerns about what happens with a counterfeit or forged instrument, a cashier's check, becoming more easily duplicated these days. The bill proposes a 15-day period for the check to be processed through the normal channels to be collected before the sheriff actually delivers property or a certificate of sale as appropriate. Also, the bill also provides that the sale will be effective as of the date and time of the sale, assuming that the check is honored in the normal course. If the committee has any questions, I'd be welcome to address those.
Questions for Mr. Wade, Representative Garrard.
Mr. Wade, are bad checks a problem?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have never had a personal experience with somebody presenting a bad check, but there are reports of bad checks having been presented at sheriff sales, which I think is part of the motivation. It's been reported to me, at least, that part of the motivation of some county sheriffs to refuse to take such instruments.
For the questions of Mr. Wade from the committee, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wade, this bill in this underlying statute introduces a term that was unfamiliar to me, teller's check. And when I looked it up to get a definition, it doesn't really give me a lot more of an understanding about it. I'm assuming it's one that has guaranteed funds, that is guaranteed by the creditworthiness of the issuing bank. But the definition, it just says it's a draft drawn by a bank on another bank or payable at or through a bank. So please assure us that we're talking about guaranteed funds here.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, essentially that's correct. A cashier's check is a check issued by the bank or financial institution itself, but often, especially in the case of, for example, a credit union, if you go to a credit union and withdraw funds, the credit union doesn't issue a check on itself, but it does issue a check drawn on another bank. But the effect is the same, is that these are collected funds at the time that they're issued.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions of Mr. Wade? Mr. Powell, you're next.
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Mr. Chair and members, we have this bill out in circulation, and the bar that put this together was in consultation with some sheriff's office, so we're fairly confident that the bill is in good shape. We will reserve the ability to bring back further comments, and the bar has agreed to work with us as the bill goes through the process should we uncover any problems. One of the issues was the definitional problems that Representative McPherson raised, and we're wanting to make sure that we too understand all of the nuances of the bill. But it does look like there's protection provided so that the sheriff's office doesn't get stiffed with bad instruments, and that was one of the concerns that we had, and we'll continue to work with the bar as the bill goes through the process. So we, as of this date, I have not received any specific critical criticisms of the bill in its current form.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Powell. Questions of Mr. Powell? All right. Further discussion from any members of the audience in the public hearing on this bill? If not, I'll close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2286.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Girard.
I would move House Bill 2286 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Girard moves that House Bill 2286 proceed to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion from the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, but Representative McPherson.
Although I don't suggest that the sub should hold this against the bill, I did notice that it moves the timing of auctions from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. as a start time, and it seems very unfair that having convened here at 8:30 that they should be giving themselves that extra room.
And I feel it a bit disappointing that the bill doesn't provide coffee for the people at the foreclosure sales, let alone coffee for the members and participants of the committee during this hearing. So, nonetheless, any further discussion on the House bill?
I'm glad to see you. Mr. Chair, I'm glad to see that we do have early morning on Monday humor.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. It happens occasionally.
Even though we have no coffee.
Function better. Okay, further discussion for the committee. Hearing none. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative
Brooke, excuse. She's just not here.
Chair Ackerman?
Aye. Welcome to the meeting. Sorry, I didn't hear. Has everyone been polled? All right. Having received a majority, House Bill 2286 is referred to the full committee with a due pass recommendation, and I'll carry the bill. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2287. Mr. Wade, you're back.
Thank you. Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Wade, and I'm here today representing the Oregon State Bar from the debtor-creditor section of the State Bar to ask the committee to consider House Bill 2287. This bill is designed to modernize the functionality of the recording of a notice of bankruptcy in the real property records of counties in which real property belonging to a bankruptcy debtor may be located. The current bill, a current statute, refers to the National Bankruptcy Act, which, of course, we haven't had since 1978, but also has a cumbersome procedure of only allowing the recording of a certified copy of a petition as filed in the bankruptcy court. The purpose of the statute, of course, is to provide record notice to the public of the existence of the bankruptcy and the existence of the bankruptcy trustee's interest in the real property that belonged to the debtor, so that a transfer of the property won't happen where the buyer is not aware of the fact that there's a bankruptcy case and that the bankruptcy estate, through the trustee, has an interest in the property. The bill will allow various named parties, including the trustee, the debtor, and their attorneys, to file a notice which is verified in the usual form for recordable instruments to advise the public of the existence of bankruptcy cases. It allows the recording of certain other copies of official bankruptcy court documents and allows for the recording of orders and judgments which release the property from the bankruptcy estate. And recommend that the committee recommend this bill for advancement as well. I'm happy to answer any questions the committee has.
All right, questions of Mr. Wade? If none, that will conclude your testimony. And as far as the public hearing is concerned, are there any other members of the audience who would like to be heard this morning on this bill? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2287 and open a work session on House Bill 2287. Discussion or a motion from the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2287 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores moves that House Bill 2287 be moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion from the committee? Hearing none, the clerk may call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garage?
Aye.
Chair Appleton?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, I'll declare House Bill 2287 forwarded to the full committee to do pass recommendation with Representative Flores as the carrier. I'm also happy to announce that coffee has arrived, and glad the chair has some significance. It's the best move I've made in the entire session, I think. So coffee is served. We'll move to a public hearing on House Bill 2289. And with apologies to counsel, I have omitted you in the last two bills. We may explain the bill, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2289 removes the four-month time limit that a claimant's successor or personal representative has to file supplemental affidavits to correct the original affidavit for estate property that is found after the original filing. I also wanted to mention that Mr. Darris, who was not able to be here, has submitted testimony in opposition to this bill, and that testimony has been provided for you.
Thank you, counsel. I have one personal sign-up sheet from the Oregon State Bar Elder Law Section, Heather Gilmore. Please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Heather Gilmore. I'm an attorney in Salem, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar Elder Law Section. The elder law section of the bar has more than 500 members in it, and it's a very vigorous section of the bar. Many of these legislative proposals have been discussed at great length on our website and also in our listserv. The elder law section of the bar supports House Bill 2289. The purpose of House Bill 2289 is to amend the small estate affidavit procedure under ORS 114-515. The goal of a small estate affidavit is to allow estates with very limited values, less than $50,000 in assets like bank accounts, stocks, bonds, and less than $90,000 in real estate, to pass to the people named in the decedent's will or their family members. Affidavits are filed with the court and they contain information about the decedent's assets and the decedent's creditors and family members. If assets are discovered after the first affidavit is filed, it's unclear whether or not the affidavit can be amended to include those additional assets. In some counties, the amendment can be filed. In other counties, it cannot. It is important to clarify the statute in order to have a uniform application of the law. It's reasonable to change the statute to allow for a correction. Oftentimes, assets are discovered several months afterwards. For example, when 1099s are issued at the end of the year, family members will find a couple of shares of stock worth a very limited amount. By allowing the amendment to the affidavit, the family member can simply file the amended affidavit, treat the stock or whatever is located as an additional asset, and then distribute it in the same manner as the balance of the assets. The value of the assets has to remain under the $50,000 and $90,000 limit, and there's an additional filing fee. It is a sound policy decision to change the statute to allow for uniform application of the law and give some clarity to our county clerks. Therefore, the elder law section of the bar is in support of this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Gilmore. Questions of the witness? I have maybe two. Okay. I see the merit in the bill. I'm concerned with the terminology used at page 1, line 22, where you say that the purpose of the supplemental affidavit is to correct the original affidavit. I'm wondering if that is too narrow of an interpretation, and you might mean amend the original affidavit. My thought being that maybe some county clerk out there, and this is where it happens, as you well know, says, well, I've been advised that I can only take an affidavit which corrects the original affidavit, and I think a correction is, in my mind, a little bit too narrow of what objective, what you're trying to accomplish. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, I think that the goal was, you'll see by Mr. Darris's opposition, that he was worried that people would be too broad in their changes to the original affidavit. And so the idea is amending it would for many practitioners be fair and a good result. We attempted to gain cooperation amongst all members of the bar, and correction seemed to be the language that everyone could agree on. I personally think that correction is also narrow. Amendment would work better. Perhaps the people who reached the agreement that it should be corrected were attempting to address Mr. Darris's concerns that there would be people who were using the affidavit in an inappropriate way. My experience is that it's rare that people use things in an inappropriate way. Most clients and members of the public are fairly honest and responsible. And if people want to commit fraud, they're going to. It's difficult to really hedge them if they're attempting to be inappropriate. So I would not object to the term amendment if the committee decided that was appropriate.
Okay. Thank you for your information. And further questions of the witness? Let me just add, is there anybody else in the wants to testify on behalf of this House bill while we're in public session? I think what I'd like to do, counsel, is suggest, can we do an amendment ourselves and make that correction to change correcting the original affidavit to amending the original affidavit?
Very good.
It's my understanding that LC has to come up here. I'm not sure if we can.
Well, what I will do is I intend to close the public hearing and not go to work session. I'll request a dash one amendment to make that one correction and bring it back for final hearing and work session.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2289. We will not proceed to work session, and I'll take care of the dash one amendment and bring the bill back. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2290. State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Gibb. I'm an attorney in private practice here in Salem, a member of the Oregon State Bar Elder Law Section, and the chair of the Legislative Committee. The Elder Law Section has proposed House Bill 2290, proposing amendments to ORS 116083 and ORS 125.475. Both of those statutory provisions relate to accountings filed in probate proceedings. ORS 116083 relates to accountings filed in an estate by a personal representative, and ORS 125.475 relates to accountings filed in conservatorship proceedings. Currently, the statutes require that those accountings be filed by the fiduciaries within 30 days of the anniversary of the appointment. Excuse me. That 30-day time period is prohibitive in some fashion because the final bank statement for that accounting period is generally required by the courts to be filed as an exhibit along with the accounting. And 30 days is often not enough time to get that final bank statement, turn around and complete the annual accounting, get that filed and served on the appropriate individuals. The House Bill 2290 proposes to extend the timelines for filing those annual accountings from 30 days to 60 days to provide the fiduciary with sufficient time to get the proper documentation, get the accounting completed, and get that filed with the court. The opposition that has been mentioned or has been presented again by Warren Darris in written testimony this morning relates to a couple of issues, primarily a dislike of the form of accountings required by the Uniform Trial Court rules, and also to a concern that the additional 30 days would give a malfeasant fiduciary, somebody who has been removed for wrongdoing or is in the process of being removed for wrongdoing, an extra 30 days to misappropriate funds. I think that is not necessarily a reasonable argument against the additional 30 days. Again, most of the fiduciaries acting as a personal representative or as a conservator are doing so well within the bounds of the law, and adding or providing them an extra 30 days to complete this annual accounting paperwork is a significant benefit or help to them, and the potential for wrongdoing is I believe overstated by Mr. Darris.
Thank you, Mr. Gibb. Any questions from the committee? No questions from the committee. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else wishing to participate in the public hearing for House Bill 2290? Hearing none, the public hearing is closed and the work session is open. Discussion from the committee or motion? Okay, Representative Flores.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a comment, but I will also make the recommendation. Having worked for a significant number of years in this field, while I've always felt the push to get an accounting done within the 30-day period, it was always done because when do we have it? So I'm suspecting that if it's 60 days, there will still be the push because it's usually working. One tends to put their workload against the timeline. Nonetheless,
Having said that, I will, Mr. Chair, move that House Bill 2290 be moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Flores moves that House Bill 2290 be forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion from the committee? Hearing none, the clerk can call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Wirth?
Aye.
Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, House Bill 2290 has passed the full committee to due pass recommendation, and I'll ask Representative Flores to carry the bill, please. Thank you. We will open the public hearing on House Bill 2291.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, good morning. I'm Ryan Gibb, attorney, private practice here in Salem, appearing on behalf of the Elder Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. The Elder Law Section of the Oregon State Bar has proposed House Bill 2291 to make a simple amendment to ORS 124.100, which is a provision of the Elder Abuse Prevention Act. Currently, ORS 124.100 allows a certain list of individuals to bring or to initiate an elder abuse action against an elder abuse perpetrator. That list includes the elderly individual themselves. It includes a guardian or conservator on behalf of the elderly person, the power of attorney for the elderly person. There are times when an elderly person won't have a power of attorney or a guardian or conservator, and they won't be able to file that action themselves for one reason or another. In those cases, some of those individuals will have a revocable living trust that they have drafted, and there'll be a trustee that they have appointed. That trustee currently does not have standing to bring such an action, but that trustee may be the person who is most intimately aware of the elderly person's financial dealings and their personal dealings. House Bill 2291 proposes to amend 124.100 to include trustees in the list of those who have standing to bring an elder abuse action on behalf of the elderly individual. I believe that it is a positive addition to the statute. Adding trustees to that list will afford greater protection to the elderly of the state of Oregon by allowing yet one more individual who has the ability to help to protect the elderly. Thank you very much.
Fine. Thank you, Mr. Gibb. Questions from the committee? Further participation in the public hearing by anyone present? If not, I'll declare the public hearing concluded and open a work session on House Bill 2291. Motion?
Mr. Chair? I would move House Bill 2291 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Well, Representative Garrard moves that House Bill 2291 be forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion from the committee? Hearing none, the clerk may call the roll.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Wirth?
Aye.
Chair Ackerman?
Aye.
Motion carries.
House Bill 2291 is forwarded to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a carrier? Representative Gerard, thank you. Again, my apologies for omitting counsel. On House Bill 2292, would you like to explain the bill, please?
Sure. Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, House Bill 2292 permits courts and dissolution judgments to order revocation of beneficiary designations made by one spouse in favor of another spouse on certain financial assets.
Thank you, counsel. We have one witness, Kevin Gage from the Family Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. Mr. Gage, good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Gage. I am a lawyer in private practice in Salem. I am here on behalf of the Family Law Section Executive Committee of the Oregon State Bar. That's the Executive Committee of the Family Law Section. Our section has about 900 to 1,000 members. I'd like to illustrate very simply the problem that this House bill is designed to fix. Imagine a husband and wife get divorced on a certain day. The wife is awarded a retirement account worth $500,000. She intends to change the beneficiary of that account from her husband to her children within the next week, but she dies before she has a chance to change the beneficiary. Under current law, that policy or that retirement account will go back to her ex-husband, the person she despises, instead of the children whom she loves. So this bill is designed to fix that problem. We have in recent years tried to put in judgments of dissolution a specific statement that the beneficiary designation is automatically revoked, and we put that in the judgments, but the insurance companies have resisted that with good cause because they have a contract that says the beneficiary is the beneficiary. So what we would like to have now is a law that says that by operation of law, if the parties choose to put it into a judgment of dissolution, or the judge orders it in a judgment of dissolution, that the beneficiary designations of certain accounts, retirement accounts, life insurance policies are revoked, then they are revoked by operation of law. And this does come up. It comes up across the United States. In every state, I would imagine, the research that I've done indicates that it's a widespread problem. It doesn't come up in each state very often, but when it does come up, it's an important issue to the people involved. Are there any questions?
I will have one, but I'll go defer to the committee first. Questions? Yes, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gage, I believe that under the law of wills, simply the act of becoming divorced causes the naming of the former spouse in the will to, in effect, lose its legal effect. That is, I think it's treated as though that person had predeceased, is the way the mechanism works. Is that a correct statement about the law of wills?
I believe you are correct, and this is dealing with issues not involving wills.
Right. I realize that this is a solution to it. How about the solution of tracking the law of wills so that automatically, without anything put in the judgment, that it would have that same legal effect as it would if it were involving a testamentary device?
That's an excellent question, and it's an issue that came up the last time we addressed this matter before the legislature. The problem with that is that sometimes people actually do want to retain their former spouse as the beneficiary, and so we do not want to have a rule that applies across the board to wipe out all beneficiary designations without the opportunity to express intent on the part of the person receiving the account. So, and there are also examples of people in default divorces and people who are not represented by lawyers who don't understand their rights. So there are examples of people who actually still like their ex-spouses and want them to be the beneficiary. I've had that happen. So this is an opportunity to evidence, if you choose to do so, in a divorce judgment, that you want the beneficiary revoked. But if you do not evidence it in the judgment, then that person who is originally designated as a beneficiary will receive it, receive the award of the money or the retirement account, unless you actually make some other affirmative designation of beneficiary.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Gage, do you anticipate that as a matter of routine that the courts will be putting into their the divorce decrees that beneficiary designations are automatically revoked without the parties seeking that provision out?
No, I believe they will not do that on their own. I don't believe a judge will do that unless requested.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I have one question. The text of the bill applies to dissolutions and annulments. the definition of spouse at line 3 of page 2 only means a person is a party to a divorce from a principal. But then as I read the staff measure summary, it represents that the bill applies to dissolution, annulment, and legal separation proceedings. So I think we have a problem regarding the scope of the bill as it's...
That's an excellent observation. You're very observant. When I first read this, I actually read it for the first time last Friday, and I noticed that separation was left out of this, the language of the bill. I brought that to the attention of Mr. Sears this morning, and my personal recommendation would be that it would apply to separation judgments as well. However, I'm not sure why the person who actually drafted this left out the word separation. It is my thought that it was inadvertent, because I think the person who drafted this is Attorney John Case of Salem, and when he referred the bill to me for purposes of testifying this morning, he was mentioning that it would apply to divorce, separation, and annulment. So I think it was an oversight.
Fine. I think we can cure this, counsel, and I will request the Dash 1 amendment to take care of that problem unless there's any objection from the committee. Okay, thank you for your testimony. Anyone else wishing to testify in the public hearing on the House Bill 2292? Hearing none, then I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2292, and I will take care of the Dash 1 amendments, and we'll bring it back at a later time. Further business before the committee? Seeing none, the committee is adjourned. Thank you.